From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Welcome to Ruthie's Table 4, a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios.
I'm Sean, and I'm the executive chef at the Royal Cafe. It's Friday lunch, so I'm here with all the chefs cooking away.
Yeah, nice. I know it's busy in here. And
I'm Gemma.
Hi, nice to meet you. And I'm the host of The Psychology of Your 20s, the podcast.
Gemma Spegg and I met for the first time just a few days ago in the River Cafe. She was introduced to me as the most exciting podcaster today. Not great for my ego. Distance keeps us apart. She lives in Sydney, I live in London. And we're in different stages of our lives, for sure. But that doesn't seem to matter. We both love talking to people, we both love eating delicious food, and we both love pondering situations and finding solutions. Listen to the titles of some of her episodes on psychology of your 20s, and you'll see why I am hooked. Embrace your authentic self. Daddy issues, why we date the wrong people, career anxiety, disillusionment, and feeling stuck. Gemma has been in the River Cafe cooking asparagus fondue with the chefs. We're going to have lunch and talk some more. On Monday, she's going back to Australia, but something tells me I'm not letting her go.
Okay. That's for sure.
So tell me about cooking fonduta. How is that in the River Cafe kitchen?
It was amazing. I actually used to work in a restaurant. I used to work at a steak restaurant, in Australia.
Where?
In Canberra. So Canberra, capital of Australia. It was how I paid my bills when I was at uni and broke. And so it was really fun to come back and to be back in the same kind of situation and cooking something. And actually, we didn't cook much fresh food. At the steak restaurant. Yeah. No, it was duck fat potatoes. So asparagus, fresh asparagus was a nice treat, that's for sure. Let's do it. I'm so excited.
Cool. So we're going to cook asparagus, which is really slap bang in season now. Like it's English asparagus and it's exactly peak season.
Yeah.
And then we've made a sauce out of creme fraiche, egg yolks and parmesan. It's really yummy. But the sauce is just you put the three ingredients together and cook them together. And we've done that.
Yeah.
And I'll just show you how we put it together.
Oh, I'm so excited. Yay.
Okay. So that.
How long did you leave it in?
Not very long.
Not very long at all.
Maybe 3 or 4 minutes, but because it's so fresh,
yeah,
it doesn't take that long to cook.
Yeah.
It's super fresh, actually. Probably slightly.
Oh, look, I love the green. When it turns that beautiful shade of green, it's just gorgeous.
Then what Keep we do is we have this sauce, which is really yummy.
Ooh.
We just put on the plate like this.
Wow. It looks like custard almost, but I know it's savoury.
Exactly. You can do platters of it. For guests, you know.
So you can up the size based on how many people.
Or how hungry you are.
Yeah. Or how hungry they are.
Yeah. Here we go.
Look at that. Simple, but amazing.
A bit of cheese.
Oh.
A bit of
Do you
extra.
Like more or less?
More.
Yeah, me too. You've got to have more parmesan.
Exactly. You never have too much.
This sauce just makes everything better.
Yeah. I agree.
Oh my goodness.
Sometimes
I'm going to finish this whole piece.
This is probably one of our most popular dishes that we have on a lunchtime.
Yeah, lovely.
But also with the sun.
With the sun. Oh.
And a glass of wine.
And a glass of wine, of course.
So would you like to read the recipe?
Yes, please. Okay. This recipe says it serves 6. I grew up in a big family, so it's going to serve 10 at least. So we're going to up some of these portions. It recommends 1.5 kilos of asparagus. Let's change that to 3 just for fun. Leftovers are always nice. 200 grams of parmesan. You know, double that, it's 400, but everyone loves parmesan cheese. You know, you never want to stop, so let's say 500, freshly grated. Garlic as well, 1 clove of garlic, peeled and crushed, of course. And then 400 milliliters of, I don't actually know how to pronounce this, creme fraiche?
Creme fraiche.
Creme fraiche.
It's a kind of sour cream that you get in France.
Mm, lovely. It's nice. I had some before when I had this, so 800 mils for that, and then 4 large organic and, of course, free-range egg yolks. We're not here for cage. Sorry, guys. So your first step will be to use a medium saucepan, maybe large in this instance, that will fit inside another larger saucepan with enough room to half fill with water. We're going to rub that crushed garlic around the surface of the smaller pan, get all those flavors in there, and add the cream and a nice amount of Parmesan, maybe more than we suggested, and of course your egg yolks. Place the pan on top of the hot water and stirring gently until the sauce thickens. That should be about 15 minutes. And of course, salt and pepper, let's season it well. Snap off the ends of the asparagus and cook that in the boiling water for 3 to 4 minutes. Interestingly, when I had it, it was a bit al dente, which was really, really nice. So maybe sitting a little bit below that 3 minutes, whatever takes your fancy. And then drain it, place in a warm bowl, and pour the fondue over the asparagus. Maybe add a little bit of olive oil if you're feeling extra excited by that. Of course, the River Cafe olive oil is amazing, so that would be my preference. And serve with, you guessed it, even more grated Parmesan. There it is.
Beautiful. Great. Do you cook for yourself?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you?
Yeah, oh, I cook cool. so much. I think I travel so much, right, that when I'm home and when I'm back in Sydney, I really don't want to go out and eat out all the time or order in. I want to be alone or with my – I live with housemates, actually.
Yeah, still. How many?
I live with three boys, three guys in their 20s. Mm. It's very a new girl situation if you've seen that TV show. And – one of my favorite things to do when I'm back is to cook something for them. So every Sunday night we do, I call it family dinner. Mm. We're not related, but by hearts we are, by minds.
Something that I, when lockdown sort of eased up, we were allowed to go out, but everybody was pretty much in their own homes. A friend of mine was making a movie, actually say with Austin Butler. We talked about Austin a minute ago. And we started having Sunday night supper, so I would cook, they would kind of do some shopping, or we'd cook and just get together, and then we played a game of cards, and there were about 8 of us, and we met every Sunday night for almost 39 weeks, you know, and it just became very important. A Sunday night dinner kind of is end of the week, the beginning of the new week. Sundays are kind of grim. Is that what do you like about Sunday night suppers?
That is spot on. And I think it emulates a family system that we, when we get older, we don't have. Mm. But the way that I really saw it was you start your week off doing something for someone else. Mm-hmm. So it was a really beautiful way for me to express my love for these people and show them generosity by going and getting a leg of lamb or making Italian meatballs or lasagna and really starting the week off having done something for someone else. And we also play cards.
Did you?
Yeah.
What was your game?
Okay, so ours is actually Monopoly Deal. So it's a card version of Monopoly. So maybe not as...
Do you buy and sell hotels?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like the only
hotel.
It's the only taste that of property ownership I think I'm going to get for a while. So it keeps me on my toes.
Maybe not with the apartment. But the, maybe, yeah, maybe not. Who do you live with? What are the guys like?
They're amazing. I really love them. One of them is an actor. One of them is in finance. One of them is in marketing. It's very different from what I do. Maybe Jack is the actor. He's actually moving to Paris soon. So the Sunday dinners are sadly coming to an end in October. But it's also really, it's nice, I think, in some ways, because it makes me feel quite maternal as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an instinct that I've always had. And I think that food and family are very much synonymous. So maybe it's because I always saw my mom doing this for me and for my dad and for my cousins and my aunts and my uncles that I've really taken the reins from her. I've taken that from her. And it's really interesting when we think about psychology, actually. Everyone's like, I don't want to turn into my parents. Mm. I don't want to be like them. And I'm like, I absolutely want to be like her. She has generosity running through her blood. She's a wonderful woman.
I found that very touching when you said you want to be like your mother. That's every parent's dream. And it certainly was mine as well. I think, you know, you can tell people who come from happy families where they were loved and where they want to love. So tell me what it was like growing up in your house? What?
It's interesting. My dad's from Queensland, so it's kind of rural. It's a bit rough and tumble sometimes. My mom's actually from Wisconsin.
Oh, she's American.
She's American, yeah.
How'd she end up in Australia?
It's kind of actually a hard story. You know, her parents got divorced and her dad kind of walked out of the picture. She hasn't spoken to him for a while. I know she won't mind me saying that. And she moved with my grandma. And they moved to Australia, and it was really hard, I think, when they first got here. She was old enough to really have friends and to want to assimilate. She was around 14. And I think that's actually a really hard age to move, but it has made her a wonderful mother because she really understands the importance of belonging. And my dad grew up in a big family, so he understood that as well. And
they met in Australia.
They met in Australia. They met at a cricket game. Hmm. And my mom went up to him and was like, I think you're really cute.
Aww.
And the rest is history. And they did long distance for a while. They have such a beautiful story. It's really nice being able to look at your parents and realize that they still really like each other and that they really get along. And every night I'll go home and they always share a glass of wine together. Mm. They cook for each other still, like I said, food and love and family.
Yeah. Are you an only child?
I'm not. I have two sisters.
So what would meals be like? Tell me about food in your house growing up.
Oh, I'd love to. So my mom, it was actually, she was the breadwinner. She worked full time. She traveled a lot. We didn't actually see her very much for a little while because she was, you know, trying to provide for the family. My dad was a stay-at-home dad. Mm. So
what did she do?
She's an economist, and so she it's so different from what I do, right? She talks about money all day. Mm. I talk about feelings. And she would be traveling, but she would always try and come back for at least 2 to 3 nights, and my dad would cook for us. Mm. And actually, the meal that I most associate with my childhood is by Jamie Oliver. He has this tuna pasta dish. It was in his book, 15-Minute Meals.
Yeah.
It's tuna and it's got this amazing basil flavor and cinnamon.
Mm.
And it's like you would never think that tuna and cinnamon would go well, but it's like delicious. And it's my comfort meal now because we ate it so much. You know, my dad was really trying to look after three young girls. And one of my sisters is an athlete. So there was also a lot of driving to practices. And
what is her sport?
It's an Australian sports football, so AFL, Australian Football League. So it's kind of like rugby. Mm. She's really tall. She's like over 6 foot.
Wow.
She's tall. She's beautiful. She's she's so kind. And yeah, so that's the meal I most associate. That or a tuna pasta bake. Yeah. A lot of tuna. Simple.
You have tuna. Yeah.
And then for dessert, we would have berry cobbler, which is a classic, right? Everyone, when you think of cobbler, you think of warmth and cozy and childhood. And
what is berry cobbler? Can you describe it?
So berry cobbler, it's kind of like, I think it was like kind of a poor man's dish back in the day because it's super simple to make. It's these berries that you cook in this like amazing sugary syrup and with butter. And then on top you put like egg and more butter and sugar and flour together and you mix it all up and then crumble it on
it's
the
like
top.
A crumble.
It's a crumble.
Yeah. So you grew up with your dad and he would cook, it would every night be a different kind of dinner. Did he really spend time on making sure that everything was good?
He did. So he's from an Italian family. So I think it's like this generational thing. His mom used to put so much care into her meals and he would do that for us.
And when your mom cooked, what would she cook?
She loves fresh food. Mm. We used to do this thing called snack plate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what that would mean was we would go to the markets with her when she was back on Saturday or Sunday, the Queen Victoria markets, if you're ever in Melbourne. It's amazing. You know, if you live there, you know all the tenders and you know everyone. And she would take us and we would all get to choose what snacks we would want on the snack plate. It's kind of like a charcuterie board.
Yeah.
It's charcuterie boards before we knew what that was.
Yeah.
And with very cheap deli meats, not prosciutto, but we would have carrots and she would always get these amazing cherry tomatoes and cucumber that she would slice and dips. And it was very like Mediterranean. Mm. And we would put it down on the table. And then there was always a portion for sweet foods. And the sweet food that we'd always get was chocolate covered pretzels.
Mm-hmm.
And they were amazing. she worked so hard, you know, but she still wanted to, when she had the time to provide and to do amazing things. And every Christmas she is the pillar of our family Christmases. Mm-hmm. No one would eat without that woman. Mm-hmm. Like, she's such a provider.
So this was your growing up. Mm-hmm. You're growing up with this food, with your father cooking, your mother coming back from a business trip and cooking. What were your teenage years like? Were you quite a happy teenager, or was it conflicted?
I actually wasn't, I don't think. I was I was a bit of a strange child. I was a bit of a strange teenager.
In what way?
I was very focused on academic success, and I went to a public school in inner city Melbourne, where it was the thing to be very different and to be, you know, drinking early and to be doing like rock and roll music and to be, it was very like punk almost. Mm-hmm. And I was a very anxious teenager, and I just wanted to do well in school, and I wanted to go on to university. I wanted to spend time in nature and by myself, and I think that I was kind of lonely. I had had friends, but I think I've always wanted to examine things deeper in a way that can sometimes make people a bit uncomfortable, and especially when you're younger and talking about your feelings isn't really as popular as it is now. And so it actually meant that I left home really young.
Well, how old were you?
I just turned 17 to go to university.
Where was that?
I went to Canberra. So in Australia, it's really uncommon to move away from your home city. But I think I was just like, I need to.
How far is Canberra from Melbourne?
It's around an 8-hour drive.
Oh, is it?
So, yeah. And in Australia, that's not that far. Mm. But in other places, you know, in Europe, that's really far. So, and I moved out of home, and I think this is going to sound weird, but I think that's where like I really came alive and I became a person rather than just someone who has memories and other people's thoughts about me.
Mm. What made you kind of blossom in that way from your high school to college?
I think it was like, I'm in this new place, no one knows who I am.
Mm. You could make your own identity.
Yeah, and it actually was such a good question, because it was like I didn't actually need to make my own identity. It was like my identity was already there, and I just let people see it. And I just met the best people I've ever met in my life. I'm still really, really close with them. And
what were they like?
They were just so intelligent. It was this shared value set. We'd all moved away from home in an environment where that's not common for a reason. And we moved into this shared living. We lived in this massive dorm at 550 people. And the kitchen, actually, it was self-catered. It was the largest non-commercial kitchen in the Southern Hemisphere.
Really?
Oh, it was
for
huge.
Students.
For students, yeah.
Did they have chefs to cook it? You were all just allowed to go in there and make your own food.
Yeah. Can you imagine what
no,
that was like?
I can't, yeah.
I'll give you one word, messy.
Yeah, messy.
Messy.
Yeah.
It was gross.
Yeah. So what would you do? Would you go in there and just clean up before you started, or would you just sort of, how did you work in a kitchen like that?
You would need to clean up. Also, you'd have to lock away your stuff because everyone's poor. Everyone wants, you know, if you have Lurpak butter, that was such like a luxury item. That would go missing so quickly.
Yeah.
Or avocados. Oh, don't even try it. And so we would come down, and we would actually, you'd have a little group. You never wanted to go alone because it was so intimidating. There's 500 people in a kitchen, and we're all 18, and we're all uncomfortable in ourselves, and you know, we feel embarrassed just by being alive at that age, I think. And you would always text your friends and be like, okay, anyone want to eat? And we'd come down, and we would cook together, and there was the staple meals, right? Pesto pasta.
Okay.
Of course. A stir fry.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, and then always a frozen meal.
Oh, okay.
I know that sounds.
It's okay.
I never did that.
You didn't do that. And what were you studying at the time?
So I obviously studied psychology, but then little known fact, I also studied a Bachelor of Politics, Economics and Philosophy. So I wanted to be a politician.
Did you?
Yeah.
I can understand that.
I was really invested in becoming the Minister for Women.
Okay.
At the time in Australia, it was a man who was the Minister for Women. It doesn't make any sense. And I was like, I find that so uncomfortable. I want to change that. I want to work for DFAT. I want to change women's lives. I want to change people's lives. And then I think I slowly became someone else, and I always had this fascination with psychology.
Because psychology is really interesting in terms of what you're doing now, but that path through the psychology at university. What was that? What did you learn?
I learned so much. I learned so much, but then at the time I had stopped working in the restaurant and I started working in child maltreatment research because it paid really well at first. I was like, oh, I have this background and I've learned all these things and this job is going to pay really well. Mm. And then suddenly I was like, it doesn't matter if this doesn't pay well, this is like what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So I'd just done one of the best courses I ever did was personality psychology and then also developmental psychology. And I think when we think about psychology, we think about disordered thinking, we think about mental ill health. And this was about just being like, your average person is more interesting and nuanced and wonderful than the whole universe. Like everything, everyone is made so differently. And I took some of that experience. I started working for this study called the Child Maltreatment Study in Australia. And it's like the first of its kind to ever track the outcomes from people who have experienced neglect or abuse into adulthood. Mm-hmm. And I was doing qualitative research for that. So I was talking to people and it was hard, but I was like, this is what I want to do. And I know that if I do something else, I won't be able to do that. Sorry, I know this isn't about food.
But it's the same. And also, when you started out by saying that you cooked Sunday night dinners to make people, and there was a whole connection. It wasn't just to feed your friends or to have a great day shopping and cooking. There was a definite connection with people and making them feel loved, making them feel a memory of their family, making them feel ready for the week, making them feel, you know, making them feel understood and that you cared about them. And I think that this all seems to be tied in, you know, with what you're doing.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Help helps is a maxim I believe in. We all carry around stress and hardship, and when we keep it inside, it starts to chip away. Therapy is a safe place, and therapy is for everyone. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Visit betterhelp.com/Ruthie today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ruthie. BetterHelp.com/Ruthie.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I always wanted to practice. I was like, I'm going to go back to practicing. I'm going to become a psychologist. And that was the trajectory I was on. And then I became a therapist for people in an entirely new way that I think only this generation and this, like, the last few decades have allowed. Like, suddenly it's almost so much more efficient. Sometimes I say to people, like, obviously take my advice with a grain of salt. I don't know you. You don't know me. We don't have this bond. We don't have a relationship. But I think the beauty of being able to immerse myself in the theory and then also to do a lot of that work with children and with people who experience domestic violence as well was that I'm able to make all of that knowledge so much more accessible with people who need it without it being wrapped up in all this academic jargon. So I don't know. Maybe I'll go back and finish it up. I'm thinking about doing a PhD. That would be so much fun.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, honestly.
Just keep going. From one podcaster to another, if we've heard the story of your university child days, tell me, how did it happen? How did you decide? Is it true that it started in the back of a car?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about
that. That's
the car.
True. I went through a breakup. It was when COVID was happening and I'd been dating him for almost just over 2 years. Mm. It was my first love. Mm. And I thought we were going to get married and it just like devastated me. And then suddenly everything was locked down. And all the things that you normally do to heal after a hurt. You know, you go to the gym, you go traveling, you go out with your friends.
You tell
your friends everything. They come over, you get drunk, they cry with you, and suddenly you couldn't do that. And I just one day had this idea. I have this theory that sometimes there's something in the world that just places an idea in your brain and you just have to grab it. Like you just, it's like a gift. Everyone gets an idea that could be the choice of their life at some point, but you have to be like, I'm going to take this now and it's mine and I'm going to give it everything. I'm going to like birth this idea. And that just kind of happened. I was like, one day I was like, oh, the psychology of your 20s. I wonder what that would be like. Oh my goodness. And then I called my best friend and I was like, what do you think about like if I started a podcast? And she was like, that would be such a great outlet for you. I think she was sick of listening to me have the conversations I now have on the show with her. And so I was like, let's do this. And just Googled like, how to start a podcast. I literally went on WikiHow.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah. I never, ever thought that it would be what it became. I just wanted to do it. I always say to people, I would have kept doing it even if no one listened.
Where did the idea of doing it in the back of your car come from?
Oh, I forgot the back of the car. Well, I lived in a house with seven people. And we had very thin walls. So the only place I had that was private was my Subaru Forester 2007.
Wait, so you're still at university?
I'm still at university, yeah. I started it in my final year. And I sat in the back of my car with my phone and I was like, today we're going to talk about imposter syndrome. And, you know, I'm starting this podcast, and I'd written a script as well. And I'd printed it out at one of my housemates has a printer. And I sat there with my phone in one hand, recording it, and then the thing in the other hand. And I had the overhead light on and only one of them works. And it just, and also, sorry, this is so funny. My car's very old and I don't take good care of it. So you can actually, you lock yourself in like all the time and the keys don't unlock it. So you have to roll down the window and get out. And so I actually think that happened. Well, I got locked in my car.
Did you have guests on your show or did you just do it by yourself from the beginning?
I did have guests, but they were my friends. So it's interesting.
They'd come and sit in the car with you.
Yeah, they'd come and sit in the car. Or we would do it at their house. Like I remember one of my best friends, Phoebe. Oh gosh, she's amazing. And we sat on the ground in her kitchen or like lounge room, and we had like a little stool in front of us, and we were just getting drunk and we recorded an episode and it's still up.
Oh, which one is that?
Let's Get Friendly with Phoebe. And we just talked about, and I feel they've all given me permission now. You know, when we recorded these, I didn't think that there was going to be millions of people listening to them. So we're telling them about where we went to primary school. We're telling them about our first pet's name, all the questions that your bank asks you for your security code. And now I'm like, oh, shit, like these things. and then only at the start of this year did I really start getting like guests on that I maybe hadn't met before, have only met a couple of times, and not people that I've known for 6-7 years.
Yeah. As your success became more evident, were you able to eat more kind of the food that you wanted to eat? Were you able to afford better food?
Can I tell you a secret?
Yes.
So the podcast took a while to take off, so I was working a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah.
But I remember the first time I ever made like a cent from the podcast. Mm-hmm. I went to this restaurant in Sydney called Toddy's. Everyone knows it. It's so amazing. And I went to Toddy's and I ordered a bread. I ordered a burrata. I ordered these tomatoes and I ordered a chocolate torta. Torte?
You can remember that, yeah.
I can remember it because it's my favorite meal.
Yeah.
It's my, like if I'm going to go and spend money on a meal in Sydney where I am, I'm going to Toddy's. They know me now. And a limoncello spritz. Most people don't like them, but I think they're great.
It's interesting that people like you or many people that I've talked to measure in a way their success through their ability to eat more interesting food.
Yeah. That's so true. And I think also I still look at now I have a lot more financial freedom, obviously, but I still find it weird sometimes to spend money on nice things like food. Mm. But I always think like this is every night I spend and have a good meal. It's always the best story ever. Mm. Like the other night when I came in and ate here, those experiences are so important to me now. And it's kind of, a reminder to me that I don't need to stress mm-hmm. as much as I did when I was really coming up, right? And that if I want to enjoy good food, and food is, like you said, such a mark of success and a mark of, I think, where you're at in your life, mm-hmm. I can do that. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, I still eat some of the same foods anyhow. Like, it's always Italian. It's mm-hmm. always Italian.
It's Italian food.
It's always pasta.
And all the episodes that you've done about dating and imposter syndrome, did people open up to you about food? Did a food ever come into their conversation?
Yeah, 100%. And it's sad because when we talk about psychology and food, mm. it's often around eating disorders.
Yeah.
And body dysmorphia and diet culture. Mm. So I remember this episode I did called The Psychology of Diet Culture and yeah. How to Embrace Our Body, breaking down exactly why our relationship with food these days has become so skewed. You know, it's no longer about fueling your body. It's no longer about community and something to be shared. I think about my little sisters and, oh my God, I just think about, I would never want them to restrict food or not see it as this beautiful thing. It genuinely makes me really upset to think about it because I just think food is not something that needs to have power over you and it should be something that liberates you and makes you feel happy and it makes you feel good emotions. But that's people open up to me a lot about their relationship with food.
With food. Yeah. And do you think that it's much more women, clearly, that have that issue because we're all brought up to fit into the right size or to be look a certain shape? Do you think it's changing, though? Do you think amongst your friends who are in their 20s are thinking differently about food?
Yeah. I think it is mostly women. Obviously, men also experience this as well, and it can be hard no matter who you are. But I think the older you get as well, the more you gain an identity where you realize that what you look like is not the most important thing about you. Mm. Your body is just a vessel for something deeper, for your soul, for your thoughts. And it was like this weird thing. I worried about that a lot when I was younger. I think there were times I had a very unhealthy relationship with food. And I like turned 23 and I was like, wow, I suddenly don't care about this anymore. Mm. Like, it's like my frontal lobe like clicked into gear and I was like, I'm going to eat so much amazing food because life is short and I love myself and I love my body and what it does for me. And if my body can do what I want it to do, of course I'm going to reward it with some amazing asparagus or the chocolate torta from Toddy's.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-lunch pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
What is your food day like? What is your breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or snacking?
So it changes because I'm traveling so much, but I think about the best food diet I can give you is when I'm at my parents' house and what I eat there. So I always wake up, I love avocado toast. It's just like it hits the spot every time. And there's this thing called Meredith's Goat's feta cheese. Do you have that?
No.
I don't think I can send it to you because I'll be breaking so many laws. But
okay, I'll come.
When you're in Australia, I'm going to buy you a massive jar and you're going to smuggle it back.
Okay.
Because it will change your life. It is the most amazing cheese, and you sprinkle it over, and it's the cheese is in this olive oil in this massive glass jar, and you drizzle the oil, and I love having that for breakfast. Anytime I come home, my mom always has one in the fridge for me. Yeah. And then lunch, I'm like not a very picky eater. So whatever's up, I'll have some of that, but I love like a chicken salad. I love a burrito. I snack a lot as well. I love snacking. I love a kombucha. I love a juice moment. And like an almond croissant in the afternoon.
Not bad.
I'm going to be honest. I'm from Australia. We drink a lot. So hits 5 o'clock. There's an Aperol in my hand.
I like it.
Or a chilled red, you know, at the moment because it's summer. And then for dinner, what have I been cooking recently, actually? Like my go-to meal is like a peppered steak, and then I slice it up with a pita bread, like a fresh pita bread, and then tzatziki, garlic dip, hummus, and then tomato and beetroot and like spinach.
Yeah.
And because I live with three boys, but obviously we have different schedules, so I always like bulk buy, and then I'll just eat that for the week because it's so much simpler. But that's my really go-to at the moment.
And can I ask you, your podcast seemed to have taken you into the realm of celebrity. You were talking about yesterday with your fans and that all these fans came to your podcast. What is that like and how did that happen?
I don't know how it happened. I really don't know. I think people just, they're looking for someone who's relatable. And I think that's what I am. Like, you heard my whole story, like, I had no real social media presence before this. I had like an Instagram with like 500 followers, my friends, my family. And I think that that really resonates with some people. Because sometimes when you hear someone who is an established celebrity talking about things, you're like, well, how do you know what I'm going through? How do you know what it's like to be ghosted? How do you know what it's like to have depressive episodes? And how do you know what it's like to struggle with money? It's like, I know all those things because that was me. It's still me, but, you know, I'm in that decade. I'm in that part of my life. And then we had this one episode on loneliness that I actually filmed when I just moved to Sydney, which is where I live now, after leaving Canberra. And I was sitting in my car. And by that stage, I'd stopped recording in my car. And I had just gotten back from something. I was so lonely. And I just sat down with my phone and I was like, I'm feeling really lonely. And I know those other people feeling like this. This is why I'm feeling lonely. This is the psychology that I know. I'm going to like almost self-therapize here. And it just like went viral. It was like no one had talked about that before. And it was so funny, you know, humble beginnings back in the car again. And that's the one that really changed my life.
Well, loneliness is huge. We did an interview with Brian Chesky, who started Airbnb. And he, as a kind of really interesting person, wanted to do something that invested in people. And he got in touch with the Surgeon General under Obama and said, you know, just go away. Here's your money. Just go away for 6 months or whatever and study anything you want to and see what's going on in this country, what's going on with young people, what's going on with the people staying in Airbnbs, what can we do? And he came back after months and months of research and looking at data and everything, and he said, there is one problem in this country. It's not depression. It's not anxiety. It's not economic fears. It's loneliness. You know, when you said that, probably people really related to that. And people, you know, are lonely with food. The people are lonely and they cook. People are, you know, in terms of my world, you see people coming into a restaurant with a table of 6 or 8 or 10, or you see people coming in by themselves. And he also said that loneliness has nothing to do with being alone. You know, that you can be in a marriage, you can be a father, you can be a mother, you can be cooking for 20, but it's a big thing going on, you know, which we're seeking to understand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that. I always say that on my show. I say that loneliness isn't your enemy, that you should embrace solitude. It's only natural, but also you could be surrounded by people and you could, it's just an emotional state. It's nothing more. It's an emotional state, and you can get through it. So food is a great remedy, isn't it?
Well, when you do feel that way about your emotional state, you might feel lonely, you might feel sad, you might feel missing someone. Is there something that you would turn to?
Yeah. I actually know my answer straight away. There's this soup that my mom used to make when I was sick. It's a lentil and silver beet soup with onion and chicken stock. I always eat that when I'm feeling down, and especially in winter. And then for dessert, I would be making that crumble, that cobbler. It's so easy. It's cheap. Yeah. I've made it so many times. And interesting you asked me that, because when the show first became really big, it was actually really hard for me. I was really overwhelmed and actually quite sad for whatever reason. Like I said, it's just an emotional state. Yeah. And that's what I cooked.
Good.
So there you go.
Well, I hope you don't need to have comfort food, but if you do, those do sound very delicious when they come.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for coming.
Oh, so amazing.
Loved being with you.
Thank you for having me. Can I tell you, the other night when we had dinner, I said to my dad when I got home, I think I have a weird relationship with success. I'm always waiting for someone to take it away, waiting for my luck to run out. And I said to him after the dinner that I had here, if this is like the best thing that happens, if this is like the best that it gets, I'm totally happy with that.
Oh.
It was such a great meal.
It's not going to have great, lots and lots of great meals.
The River Cafe Lookbook is now available in bookshops and online. It has over 100 recipes beautifully illustrated with photographs from the renowned photographer Matthew Donaldson. The book has 50 delicious and easy-to-prepare recipes, including a host of River Cafe classics that have been specially adapted for new cooks. The River Cafe Lookbook, recipes for cooks of all ages. Ruthie's Table 4 is a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.